Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. I can't wait for this podcast. Someone that I've known for a very long time, we used to pretend we knew what we were doing at heart together. But since leaving, he's gone on to do absolutely incredible things. TV presenter, climate and science expert. He's also just told us that he's basically like Elle Woods, because now he's working with Harvard as a climate creator. We're so, so excited to welcome James Stewart to the podcast. Hey.
Oh my gosh.
That was a great intro. I want to know why you're the new Elle Woods, firstly.
Yeah. I just don't have the pen. I need a pink fluffy pen, guys.
And the dog.
That can be organised.
And the dog.
The dog. I've got the dog, just need the little fluffy pen and I'll be good to go. Yeah, well, it's a bit weird because I sort of do all this. I feel like I shouldn't, you know, when you go to someone and you feel like you don't belong because literally the cleverest people in the world go to this place and you kind of wander in there like in your tracksuit like, well, hey guys, let's talk about climate change. But it's somehow they've let me in.
It is quite amazing. Not saying that you don't deserve to be there, but we basically just fucked around together for so many years at heart. And now you're giving lectures at Harvard. Like, yeah. I literally didn't think you knew how to turn a Bunsen burner on. And now look at you.
To be fair, though, it never came up, did it?
No. Like, you didn't have to do that at heart.
No,
that was just a judgment. That was just a judgment from my side.
I know a lot of people say that though, because it's I like kind of came into this world like a lot of us do through entertainment, but I actually came from far too many science degrees. I spent way too long in labs at university when I should have been doing much more fun things. And to be honest with you, it kind of only happened because I was very aware that there was no one at our age communicating about this world that we had and what was changing in it in a way that wasn't just so depressing. And we'll come on to this in a bit. And there is definitely room to be cautious because it's not going the way we want in the climate perspective. But if we keep hearing that all the time, we're never going to engage with it or change it. And I was like, you know, I've done a bit of entertainment stuff. I hopefully am a good communicator. Maybe you'll disagree by the end of this. But I thought if I could match like a bit of science knowledge with a bit of, you know, way of talking about science in a positive way, maybe there's a little gap for it. And so far, so good. Basically, when Love Island kind of happened, all the jobs kind of went. So you had
so
to, like,
true.
Didn't
it's
it?
So true.
Like originally. And so, like, you know, all those of us like Zoe and I back in the day, like doing presenting, that those jobs didn't exist anymore. So I thought, well, what can I actually do that's actually useful to humanity rather than, you know, sitting there talking about what Kim Kardashian was having for breakfast, which is in what I did for many years.
Yeah. I mean, which I still love to hear. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, Georgia loves still all loves that stuff. Yeah.
There's still a place for that for sure. But yeah, so it was, that was how that happened.
I think it's one of those things as well that, you know, we've got you on the podcast today to kind of give us some tips and some hints and some advice on how we actually communicate all of those amazingly big but brilliant and really super important conversations with our children. And I think someone said something to me the other day that there is so much pressure on, you know, the younger generation and our kids, because we're basically saying to them, well, it's up to you now. You got to sort this out.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine growing up in a world where you were like, oh shit, it's completely up to us to stop the destruction of the world.
Yeah. And you know what I was thinking about just before this episode? I was thinking, like, for me, I feel like, oh my gosh, you know, we're being fed all this information. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. And sometimes the whole discussion around climate change isn't like top of my agenda to talk about with the kids. And I was thinking about it, and I was thinking it's difficult for us to change the way that we live. And we're all trying to unpick all the habits that we've built you know, over the last however many years. But actually, we've got an opportunity to kind of instill in our kids, and it just becomes second nature.
Yeah.
That's how they live. And I was thinking, if I can do anything, it's probably going to be that, in sort of that it becomes like just, yeah, like literally second nature for them to do the things that we need to do, so that it's not a big deal for them and they just do it, and that's just how they live.
Yeah, because it wasn't really a part of, like, particularly when I grew up, I mean, I'm 33, it wasn't something really learned about school. Like, it just wasn't really a conversation. And I don't know if the same for you guys. Like, I don't remember learning about climate change. I remember seeing, like, documentaries and David Attenborough was still very much a thing. But then
I remember the ozone layer.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is doing really well. You know, the ozone layer.
Brilliant.
That's actually,
great.
Someone asked me that the other day. I was like, yeah, the ozone layer, we actually managed to, because that was all about CFCs, wasn't it? And essentially deodorants.
Yeah,
and we managed
to
close it back again, because we all came together, funnily enough, and it actually worked out. Imagine what we could do if we did that this time.
So, I mean, the messaging, in a nutshell, because obviously you've just come back from China filming something, you know, you're doing a lot of stuff with the BBC, and you are targeting children, right, to become much more in a you know, really non-scary way,
in a positive way, to become much more
aware. Tell us about that and why that's important to you.
Yeah, exactly. So for all the things you just said, so the sense of the weight of responsibility that, rightly or wrongly, these people have is huge. It's never been bigger. And I think it's our role as scientists, as people in this world, to empower these kids, essentially, with as many tools and as many weapons as they possibly can have to take on this challenge. Because there is nothing bigger in the world that, you know, you can support whatever charities you want, you can support whatever football team you want. If we're not here to exist as part of that, then kind of what's the point? I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen, but certainly that's the challenge that, you know, is some scientists would say that we're facing. So children, for me, are the reason I love working on kids. I have like two kids shows on CBBS and CBBC, and they are by far and away, kids are the most passionate people I've ever met when it comes to nature and forests and the planet, and they just love it. So to me, it's like, firstly, it's an audience that's already converted. Actually, often it's the parents that you kind of got to get on side. Mm. So you've got a captive audience already, they want to learn. And I actually flip it on its head and say, yeah, it's a massive challenge and it's a huge weight of responsibility to these kids, but actually that should be quite empowering to kids. Now let's get this next generation of engineers, scientists, because it's not just, you know, people in labs. It's about, you know, people building these big geoengineering solutions. Let's give them the tools to do that. And I think that's why young people in particular are so important in this fight. And overwhelmingly, when I speak to like other climate scientists, they are hopeful. And that's what our podcast, Saving Planet Earth, is all about. I got 8 of the world's leading climate scientists to come on, and they all said, by and large, the reason they're hopeful is because of young people. And that shouldn't be scary to kids. That should be exciting, because you've got this amazing chance to do something that no other generation's been able to do.
And it's just jumping on to what Georgia said. It's almost got to be, you know, people that, households that don't recycle, for example. You want the kids to be like, you don't recycle? That's not me putting any judgment on, because, you know, we only started doing it a couple of years ago. We were very late to the party and I feel terrible about that. But we are now becoming much more environmentally aware. But you almost want it to be like, what, you don't do that? Oh God, why are you not doing that?
It's just like second nature. You just do it. It's just something you do in your everyday and consider.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but to George's point, like she said, there's a lot of other things. Like, a lot of people at the moment just trying to get from day to day, right? You're just trying to survive and pay your bills and do your thing. And the climate feels like this massive problem that's this big sort of cloud literally in the distance that can feel like something you don't have time or a chance to worry about. So I don't want people to ever feel like, I don't know, that they're being preached to or that we're telling them what to do. And like you said, Zoe, it's more about, okay, if you are the sort of person that wants to be more interested in this stuff and take it a bit more seriously, then there's definitely some things we can do. But with that said, like, there's a lot of people just trying to get by, and climate change, like many problems in the world with wars and what's going on at the moment, it feels like something that's so far away and unaccessible. And I guess that's what we're trying to change a little bit.
I actually think there's probably quite a lot of lack of education around it, as in we've touched on the fact that this was not something that we grew up having the knowledge around. So what can we do? What can households and kids get involved in day to day?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the other thing to say with this is the number one thing I get asked is like, I'm just one person. What can I actually make a difference? Like, really, James, you're telling me that if I go and recycle every fortnight and I drive an EV, that's going to make a difference? And the answer is absolutely yes. And I think if you get that mentality first and foremost, then you're kind of good to go. I don't have children, but as I said, I kind of had made a career working with kids in this capacity. So I'll be fascinated to get your guys' thoughts about how you talk to your kids about it. we'll come on to that. But I think the first thing we can do, if you're a family or you're a mum or a dad and you have children that are worried about the future of the planet, that's eco-anxiety, which is something that's massively on the rise. I think there's a crazy stat, like 70% of 9 to 12 year olds are worried about the future of our planet. Like, that is something that keeps them up at night, that
wow,
they'll be talking to their peers about. It's really scary. Like, we're seeing, we constantly get fed like icebergs melting. That's like the poster boy for climate change. Mm. And it's terrifying. You know, we've had kids come on our podcast that, even going on holiday, you know, you think, where if you went on to Europe last summer and it was like 45, 50 degrees in some places.
Yeah. And the fires and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, for kids, like, for us, that's scary, right? But we can kind of make it relative. But for children, that's super, super terrifying. So there are lots of things we can do. I think the first thing to do is talk about solutions. And this is something that I'm really big on. Discuss the positive things that are going on in climate change. That's what we try and do on the podcast. It's what, you know, on social media, there's loads of great resources for. A bit like cancer research is how I describe it. Like, I don't know anything about cancer research, but I know that as we're talking on this podcast right now, there's amazing people trying to cure cancer. The same is true of climate. You can't probably cure climate change, but what we can do is really limit the effects of what's happening. And there's some really cool things going on. Like, we had the guys from Cambridge University come on and told us about how they're refreezing the Arctic.
Oh my God, yes.
Like, stuff like that. You know, these, you know, why dolphin poo can actually really help coral reefs. Why we might one day be able to put solar panels in space. There's some really cool things that science is doing to kind of respond to climate change. So I think always remember that, kids, families, anyone listening, there's always people working as you go to school, as you go to your day of work. That's their job. So take solace in that, because I think that, for me, is, it makes me feel good. And I do this every day. Like, I like knowing that people are doing some cool stuff.
You obviously mentioned what other people are doing, and that's amazing, and we can absolutely show our kids that. But what about, like, what can we get them involved in doing? Our kids are range from 4 to how old is Island?
10.
So, you know, that kind of age group, they're at primary school, like, what can they be doing?
Yeah, I think get them in nature. I think if you can get kids that link between animal, whether that's pets, even nature, trees, forests, get their hands dirty, start composting, anything that gives them like a link to the natural world that, you know, we're trying to protect, and themselves, and make them aware, like, in any way that you can of their role in that. Because it's really difficult and easy to think that, you know, I live in central London. Why does what I do here make a difference to polar bears?
Yeah.
I think if you can make the link between, you know, nature and what you're doing at home and why it's so important to respect it and to be part of it and to enjoy it from as early an age as you can, then that they're going to have a much better understanding of the world around us. And then it's things like, you know, organized community things like beach clear ups are really good. I know these sound like real cliche gimmicky things, but they really work. Not only bring like communities together, but also kids love it. Make it a challenge. Like a
that's
scavenger
what I was
going
to say. Stuff like that they like, don't they? And they like to get involved.
Yeah,
in.
We do this thing where because like we're big recyclers now. From like
God, so not, away, not getting mad.
Not getting involved in it. I've like turned the corner and I'm literally the recycling gnaws in the house. So what we do is we and Dozer, God, we've got to throw him under the bus here, can be a little bit loose with his recycling. As in, there's obviously, for example, on a raspberry or a strawberry or a blueberry pot, you can't recycle the sleeve. You have to take the sleeve off and then the film, sorry, and then you have to take the film to a separate part of the supermarket. He doesn't listen to those rules. He just chucks the whole thing in. So we have to go through the bin. We tip it onto the table and we go through and we go, yes. And they go, I go, yes or no. And they go, yes. And then we put that in the yes part, and they're becoming so engaged in this lovely process. This morning we were talking about, you know, cardboard, we were talking about plastics, we were talking about composting because their granddad does it up in Scotland. And then I basically was telling them that, you know, it's then put on the fields and it's manure and all this. And then Kit was like, hold on, but we eat the crops. Does that mean we're eating poo? And then that was like a source of a lot of entertainment, but it was a really, really great discussion point. So things like that are really, I find really fun with them, but they're super engaged in it.
That's, can I ask, so what made you pivot? Like, why did you said like a couple of years ago, it just changed.
My mum is living in Kenya on the beach and she lives on the ocean, and just seeing what's happening with the coral and the turtles, which she's like head of the turtle group over there. And it's like these turtles are coming in with like plastic bags wrapped around their necks and dying and into their fins.
Oh,
and
I just,
oh my God, Georgia, it's so distressing. Even in the last 10 years, what's happened to that beach? I just thought, what the fuck am I doing? I couldn't turn, I don't do enough. I saw myself using cling film today and I thought, this is no good. Why have I got cling film in the house? So, but I am trying to do more.
Yeah. I mean, I've always had, my husband is like, any rule that you can have, he's like all over it. So I feel like he's been all over the recycling thing probably since he was 4 or something, telling everyone what to do in the house. So he is.
We call him Judgy James.
We call him Judgy James, and he is very judgy and he will judge people.
I feel like him and I should hang out. We sound quite similar.
Anyone who lives on my road, he will be judging your recycling and how you're doing it and what is in there, just so you know. That is what happened. But he kind of made me go the other way. They actually really enjoy the rules. And, you know, there's a white bag and there's a blue bag, and they go out there and they you know, they divide it all up. And I think it's that whole thing of making it not a negative, making it a positive with children, at least. Yeah.
If you can gamify anything, and like, that's a great, I hadn't even thought of that recycling, like, yes, no thing. That's, we have a game like that on Get Set Galactic where there's like a conveyor belt of stuff and the kids have to collect rubbish. Anything like that. But I think anything like, it's like old school, like if you've got an allotment or if someone in your family grows vegetable, get them down there and like see that, just that connection between like soil and start and end point. And also it comes down to things like toys as well, you know, explaining to kids like plastic toys, getting them to kind of understand that actually sometimes it's cool to have like a wooden toy, or you don't need to buy something new. I know that's really difficult and there's always going to be stuff you have to buy, but that's such a big like part of this. Like plastic, obviously, as we all know, is terrible.
Well, we've worked with these. There are some amazing, for anybody listening that's, you know, has a bit of a guilt around the toy thing. As we know, we've just had Christmas, endless presents coming into the house, etc. Facebook Marketplace is a really great place to start, and actually getting kids involved in that, showing them that, you know what, they don't actually need a new bike. There's great secondhand bikes on there, secondhand toys. This whole pass it, you know, pay it forward thing with the toys, I absolutely love. Also, there are some amazing companies. Toy box companies that they're like subscription toy companies.
Get Whirly. I was going to say Whirly. There are a few others as well. But, and the same with them, baby clothes. That's another thing. There's similar subscriptions you can do now, which have come on so much since like we had the kids. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome. Like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
Actually, someone has written in and asked a question about how do you talk about consumerism and the throwaway culture with kids? Because it, like, honestly, we've spoken about this before, Zoe. You know, we only have to step into the supermarket with the kids and it's like, I want a magazine.
I want a toy.
I want a toy. And, you know, when you've been beaten down and you're knackered and you think, or whatever, just have it. And then the plastic bits from the magazine end up in the house and then you're like, oh my God, and now this is a headache because this is everywhere. And it's just breaking that cycle, isn't it? That you
Agreed.
You don't just grab a magazine just to shut them up.
Which
but,
is hard.
But how do we
imagine.
Talk about that?
Easier said than consumerism is like that's a horrible word generally, even for adults, but for children, I think what Zoe mentioned there about what's happening to nature is always, like I said at the start of this, kids and nature, they love it. And if you can somehow relate our actions, i.e. buying plastic, buying stuff, to impacting on animals, because often we care more about what's happening to animals than to ourselves, particularly when you're, you know, 6 or 7. So if you were able to make a link and say, look, actually, why don't we not buy that, because somewhere down the line, it may impact on something you can't even see. I think that's a really good way of talking about it. And also just this, like the idea that it's cool to like build stuff out of, you know, cardboard forts, or whether that's, you know, nowadays old clothes are cool again, like retro clothes. But I've like bunch of t-shirts, like encouraging them to empower their own sense of style or self from stuff that's already existing. Because if stuff's made, it's not going to have a carbon footprint, right? Because you've already used the resources to make it. So the trick is keeping that in the life cycle as long as you can. I.e., if you have a t-shirt that's 20 years old, keep wearing it because you've already used what you need to make it.
Can we talk about the sort of fashion side of things? And I think probably, again, Georgia and I are quite guilty of, you know, leaning towards, you know, we work in that industry where everything's got a swipe up link to it and everything is everything is disposable. And, you know, don't feel that great about it. But what impact does the fashion industry, or at least the fast fashion industry, have on climate change?
If you said to me what the two biggest things that impact climate, I'd say food and fashion.
Okay.
Probably in that order, but...
Right, talk fast to us
fashion,
about it.
Yeah, fast fashion in particular. So the idea, fast fashion, for anyone that isn't aware of the phrase, the idea that you're essentially like the Boohoos, I don't want to name them, but we know who they are. The companies that make clothes so, so quickly that get replaced very, very quickly. The problem with that is the resources that they use, right? So to make any item of clothing, you need water, you need... there's a carbon footprint because it's coming from somewhere else, whether that be China, Asia. So every piece of clothing that you have and that you wear has a carbon footprint. The reason fast fashion is so bad is because you're making much more of it much more quickly and you're replacing it much more quickly. And so you're throwing it away again and then you're getting it again. It's terrible. It's one of the worst things that you can possibly do. So that's why I'm certainly no fashion expert, but if there's one thing you could change today after you listen to this podcast, it would be that. That, or try maybe eliminating meat once a week would be a good kind of easy life hack in terms of talking about directly the carbon impact of a piece of clothing or a piece of food.
Yeah.
And how do you know if something's fast fashion or not?
I don't think there's, unfortunately, and this is part of the problem, there's no sort of governing body that says yes or no, because we live in a democracy and that's one of the wonderful things about it. But you can probably tell based on price. And material. If something is super cheap and it's made of items that are synthetic, it's probably fast fashion. You can probably tell where it's come from. I don't want to sort of name the brands, but
no.
The ones that have a big turnover, so that you can go on a website one day and they've got some things, and then the next day they've got totally different things.
You know, in terms of sort of kids wear, you know, for instance, I don't know, I'll nip into Primark sometimes because the kids need
James
leggings.
Face.
The kids need leggings for this is just honest. The kids need leggings for school, right? They need them for school. £2.50 for a pair of leggings, which I know they are going to trash, and I know whether I spent £40 on those leggings or £2.50 on those leggings, they're going to trash them because they do knee slides in the playground.
Such a good point, George.
And we should never discourage that.
Because I will. I buy stuff on Vinted, especially for Axel. Arquette stuff I always buy on Vinted. There's loads of brands I buy on Vinted for him, and that is absolutely fine. But there are certain items like that, like the school trousers and leggings and things like that. And I don't want to spend £40 on one pair when I can spend £2.50 on it. And I guess it's a conundrum. It's the balance, isn't it? And I just, you know, for people listening, where should we sit with that kind of thing? Because our kids are going to do that forever, aren't they?
There are just some things that it's like flying. Like sometimes you just have to fly. Sometimes you, like the way the world is geared up, as you just mentioned, you can't, like if we lived in a perfect world and we didn't do any of this stuff, obviously we wouldn't be having this conversation. So there's some things where you have to just go and put your hands up. Like I had to go to China to film. I'm a climate scientist. It doesn't look good, but sometimes you have to do things. And I think that probably is an example of, Georgia, what you're talking about. And I guess it's on us as parents and adults and people to not feel guilty about every action we do and think, okay, you know what? I bought the Primark leggings, but at the same time, for Christmas this year, they got toys that have been from Worley, or they've got, you know, we built some really cool stuff in the garden this week, or we composted the food that we made on Sunday rather than getting a takeaway. So I guess it's a case of balance. So it's from a parenting perspective, it's weighing up like, okay, look, there are some things, there are some must-haves, right? And there's always going to be underwear, tights, like you said. You can always, that's fine. So long as in other ways you're kind of making up for that. Maybe you take them to school in an electric car. Maybe you get them cycling to school. Maybe you walk to school. So if you are someone that's like eco-minded, it's like, okay, I'll take the hit on this, but actually instead I'll do this to make up for it. And that's basically called carbon offsetting, which you can, you know, people pay for. So it's that kind of in your head, maybe like mentally balancing out. So the weight of your actions.
Someone's messaged in here saying how to make them feel less guilty about the impact of holiday flights.
Yeah.
So the kids are feeling guilty about the impact of holiday flights.
See, my kids, I'll be completely honest, they wouldn't even know that was a thing. They wouldn't know.
That doesn't surprise me, George.
They need to know. But they need to know.
Yeah.
They need to know, but that's right. How do you stop them from feeling guilty? Because
flying is like, unless you're planning on setting up a petrol company or going in an oil tanker, flying's about the most carbon heavy activity that we can do as a person, probably. And by that, the reason we talk about carbon is because it's something you can actually measure. So every time you do something, you put carbon into the air, that then creates this greenhouse effect. So we talk about carbon a lot because it's like we can measure it. So, you know, if the fashion industry contributes 8 to 10% of all global carbon emissions, aviation's aviation's not far off that. So flying's not good for the planet, but as we just talked about, like sometimes you just have to fly. And the way a really good way to make them feel better about flying is we talked about carbon offsetting. So this is this idea. You might have even seen it. I don't know if you guys have flown recently. A lot of airlines will say, okay, you can pay £25 and we will carbon offset the price of your flight. Mm. Have you seen that, Zoe?
What does that even mean? I haven't seen it. I don't know what it means.
Yeah, it's a kind of guilt-free way of saying, we're going to go and plant some trees somewhere and that's going to negate the emissions that you've just had from this flight.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I know Etihad definitely do that.
Yeah, it's come under fire a bit recently. And in fact, carbon offsetting's done through airlines is not great, but what the point I'm getting to is that we talked about balance. It's this kind of similar thing. I think it's important to make kids aware that everything they do has an impact, whether that, and flying particularly is not great because it uses petrol, and then explaining that. But actually what you could then do is say, all right, maybe we could make a contribution to, it doesn't have to be financial, to a charity or to a local scheme, like a beach cleanup or a litter picking activity.
Yeah.
And that is essentially carbon offsetting because what you're doing is putting back in what you've taken out. So I think that's a good way to kind of encourage them to feel guilt-free about it is, look, you've done an action, but let's look at what we can do to kind of make up for that. It's not the answer. Like, flying's just bad. There's no way of getting around that, but we can't just not fly.
No, we can't just not fly. George, you've had an electric car before and your kids must have loved that. They must have understood. I bet they loved you for that.
Because
my kids are always whining on about how I've got I can't believe you've got a diesel car.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, God, I don't even want it.
They learn about that at school. And I do think the electric car thing now, I think it's cool to them.
Is
at
it?
The moment. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone's dad just got a Polestar and you're like, oh, great. You know, and it's all like, well, and it's spot the Tesla.
Someone's got a Tesla. Yeah.
Can see whose parents are doing well at school, yeah.
But then it kind of does become that thing again, doesn't it? Like of, oh, you've got this and it's, okay, it's a good thing, definitely, you know, switching to electric cars.
It's not affordable.
What I mean. Well, we had to get rid of ours because we couldn't sustain having it anymore.
But then can you get second hand, like, so I've, getting a bit boring here, but I went to Cazoo. I went to Cazoo.com. So great, by the way, if you're looking for a car, not a paid ad, just brilliant.
Could be, let us know.
Like, I got my dream car and it was 2019, but it's a diesel, but I got it, you know, it's just like a really great price for it. But I want to try and find the equivalent in the electric form. But electric cars are expensive and the initial cost is expensive to set up. And then you've got to spend £1,000 getting that massive super duper charger at home.
Yeah.
You know, like they're not making it that easy at the moment.
No, this is like the thing as when you kind of tell people that this is what you do. Electric cars is like the first thing people normally hit you with. And I'm still a little bit to be honest, I don't personally have, my partner has a car. I'm not convinced on electric cars, but that's just a personal thing because I don't think we've got the infrastructure in the United Kingdom to sustain electric cars. I think there's way more cars than charging points. And I think there's no actual link at the moment between, basically there's going to be more technology, I think, that comes along in the next 5 to 10 years, probably from hydrogen, that's going to be much better. Because the problem with electric cars, I feel like I'm just telling you about all the problems. we use lithium batteries in electric cars. Any charger, and we take it comes out the ground. So there's a lot of, I don't know, I'm not completely sold on EVs. I think that obviously it's a great step and it's better than petrol and that's always a positive, but yeah, I
You're sitting on the fence about it, James, and I see where you're hedging your bets with it.
I want to have strong opinions though, but I feel like
we don't know yet.
We don't know yet.
Yeah, I think it's a good. It's definitely better than petrol, but it's a bit like you probably saw the flight that Richard Branson took, which was powered by cooking oil the other week.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolute bollocks. It's just like it's a really nice gimmick, and I'm not saying that EVs are a gimmick because they're, like I said, better than petrol. But in the case of that Virgin flight, they're using cooking oil and stuff, but that. They're called sustainable aviation fuels, SAFs. It probably isn't going to be, it's like a nice stopgap. It's only going to be around for a couple of years. And then it's just one of those things that's going to kind of come and go. We won't be flying around with that kind of technology. That just won't happen.
Right.
Okay. Well, we'll be flying around using urine because I watched Operation Ouch the other day and they were using people's urine and turning it into electricity. How cool is that?
Human poo as well was another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is what I mean. Like, these are great examples. Like you talked about how to get kids involved in flying and how
kids
to make them
would
feel
love
guilt-free.
That.
Anything poo related. Is always a win, but also just the cool stuff that, like I said at the start of this, like the cool stuff, like that's without even realizing that's like a really interesting geoengineering project. Like it doesn't have to be this big science word. It's just human poo powering a plane.
It's number one and number two.
I love it.
If you can get them interested in science and like the world and geography and nature early doors, and then these sort of conversations become like normal, and then that's such a good way they won't then feel guilty because they're clued up. I think, like you said, gee, like knowledge is a big part of this.
Yeah.
Just one more question, James, because I think this is quite nice. Anybody listening, like Tasha, who says, where do I even start educating myself so that I can educate my children? Where do we start?
Yeah, some good resources.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, I say this from being biased because I've just done them. The BBC bite-sized podcasts, which we just did. We just recorded a bunch of them. I did the physics ones. Are really good for adults. I learned way more from doing those than I have done sometimes, like in my actual job. So that's a good resource. I think Nat Geo. I always like. There's a Nat Geo kids section. It's got like a kids portal on there. I've got it open as a tab right now because I think they talk about this subject particularly well. I love stuff like BBC Futures, which is it talks about like some of the things we talked about. Like they just did a really cool thing on how reindeers keep the snow in Finland, like why they're really important for that. Things like Euronews, they do a lot of really good eco innovation bits. TikTok, like, hey, I'm not a huge fan, but there's some really great innovative quick like wins there about, you know, how to recycle, I don't know, plastic bags or turn them into speakers or
hey, really, TikTok? Because I just see like terrible haircuts and people dancing in the kitchen badly.
That's maybe your search history, though. But yeah,
yeah,
it's a really good resource. Like, there's some really if you search in the right place, there's like an education you can like scale it to education. Brilliant. There's some really interesting things going on. Even if you just like passively take in like some of that stuff, it's I like it a lot.
James, what a wonderful conversation.
Thank you.
If you take nothing else from this podcast, just help and show kids it's not all on them. Like, yes, they're a part of this, but they don't have to feel this huge weight of burden. It should be like an empowering thing. Like, you've got a great chance to go. You've got your whole lives ahead of you. You can go do some really cool stuff and get us back on track.
I love
James,
that.
What a
Thank
lovely,
you.
Lovely last note to the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on, James Stewart.
Thanks.
Bye, guys.
How amazing was that conversation? I think for so many reasons, but I love the way that James is able to communicate such a powerful message without it seeming like he's drilling it down our throats, you know, because sometimes those big conversations can feel quite overwhelming and quite heavy, but it was just done in such a beautiful way.
I totally agree. And I also think that, you know, sometimes when it just feels like a lesson and someone's telling you what to do and it doesn't feel realistic, you do just completely back away. But I love that he was realistic. And, you know, there are certain things that, you know, we can't change. But if we do 10 things that we can change, that one thing isn't going to make a huge amount of difference. So, yeah, I mean, I've got some work to do for sure. But I think even just
being... I think everyone does.
Just being mindful
as well. Don't beat yourself up.
George,
you do loads.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just being mindful, I guess, now of things. And yeah, I've stopped buying those bloody magazines with plastic crap on the front.
You and me both. I mean, 100%. And I think at this point in the podcast, we normally do products, but we felt like there were loads of takeaways from that podcast.
Yeah.
And also because it's a podcast around sustainability, we don't really want to add any more things for you to buy on your list. So we'll just kind of leave it there. But like Georgia said, it's just making those little changes in the home and getting your kids involved. If we all do our bit, then make a brighter future. Thank you so much for sending in your questions for today's podcast. As always, we'd love you to rate, review, subscribe, and please, please give our podcast us a little follow.
Yeah, and if you've got any feedback on this episode or any other Q&A topics you'd like us to cover, then drop us a DM on Instagram. We're on @MadeByMamas, and we'll be back on Tuesday. Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.